Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist. Join me as I seek out the small incremental changes being applied in other industries that we can learn from and that can be applied in healthcare. Can these changes bring immediate value, but also add up to the big improvements and revolution we need in healthcare? Come along with me to explore the possibilities. My innovative guests from around the globe have used small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot.
And today, as I am each and every month, I'm joined by Dr. Craig Joseph, who is the Chief Medical Officer for Nordic Consulting. Craig, thanks for joining me this month.
Thank you for having me.
So, as we always do, we focus on the latest and greatest news you can use. And contextually, there's a fair amount going on, but I guess I'm not even sure what word to use, is the announcement from the CDC on testing. For those that don't know, essentially the CDC said, we should stop testing. We don't need to test people that maybe have it, maybe came into contact with people that had it. And gosh, if you don't have any symptoms and you think you've got it, we shouldn't test you. What the hell is going on?
Well, taking it back, I'm not sure you're aware. You've heard about this novel coronavirus thing, I think.
I have.
Okay. I wanted to make sure that you're aware of what's going on in public health in the United States. And I'm told it's affecting other countries as well, but I'm not an expert outside of the U.S. So, apparently, very recently, the CDC changed a longstanding recommendation, which was everyone agreed, was if you were exposed to someone who was positive for COVID-19, that you should get tested. And by exposed, they don't mean that you quickly walked by someone, although that's right. Possible. But, you know, if you were with them for within 6 feet for more than 15 minutes, something along those lines, you should get tested. And anyone that gets tested should quarantine until they hear back from the, until they get the test result. And that's certainly reasonable if you get the test result quickly. It may not be so reasonable if you're not getting it for 7 to 10 days. But
just a note on that, if I may.
Yes, you may.
I feel like if your result comes back at any time after either 24, but at the outer limit of 48 hours, you should not have to, and nobody should pay for it. If you as a testing vendor or provider can't provide it within 48 hours.
I was going to say 72 hours, but just because I'm a nice, much more flexible person than you.
You're clearly nicer than I am.
In several days, you should get a test result. Be that as it may, the new recommendations from the CDC are not far from what you somewhat sarcastically threw out, which is, hey, it's probably not that important anyway. And so that's the new official recommendation, unless something changes if you've been exposed to someone.
Official, as in government recommendation, yeah. Regulatory recommendation?
It wasn't long ago that you and I were talking and saying, I know that I said it and you didn't think it was ridiculous, that, you know, we should be randomly testing people. And that's how we're going, you know, pulling people off the street and offering to test them for free so that we know we have a good sense of, hey, what's going on out there for people who are not symptomatic, right? Because either they had a mild case or they're negative, or they thought they were negative and now they're positive. So there's a tremendous benefit and you really can't over-test, right? You can, it's impossible to test too much in terms of the information and how helpful it can be to tell us when we can decrease some of our quarantining and the physical isolation that we have to do. So it is astounding and haven't read a scientist or academician yet who can understand the rational changes or rational underpinning for these changes.
So let's try, and I know this is going to be difficult because I'm struggling with any kind of justification for that position, but let's run through some potential reasons why that might be good advice. We've seen another country that did it successfully and they have a zero spread of COVID-19. Is that true? Can you think of anybody that, I mean, we know of certainly countries that have pretty much hammered it down to nothing. New Zealand always jumps to the top of my list.
Yeah.
Were they doing no testing?
They do a lot of testing.
They do, don't they?
They do, and they do aggressive contact testing. So it kind of the opposite of what we're of what it seems the CDC is now recommending. If you're feeling great and you don't have any chronic medical problems and you were exposed to someone who's positive, and by exposed meaning meaningfully close to them for a meaningful amount of time, hey, you may not need a COVID-19 test. And certainly if all we were caring about, all right, so here, well, since we're playing a game, if we only care about you, if there's no concept of public health, then okay, I guess, yeah, if you're asymptomatic and don't have any chronic medical diseases, the chances that you're going to die are low, and we probably wouldn't do anything about it. However, there is this concept of, and maybe you've heard of this, called public health, where we worry about other people. And so if you are exposed and you're young and you don't have any chronic medical conditions, you still might want to know if you have it, because we know without question that you can asymptomatically spread this. So if you're positive and you feel great and you go home to your parents and grandparents, you might want to know before you go and do hang out with them, because you could absolutely give it to them, and now they are not in the category of young and no chronic diseases. So that public health thing just gets you at the end. It always does, Dr. Nick.
So, again, trying to be charitable, trying to find a reason. What about economics? I mean, these are expensive tests. Is there an economic argument that says, well, we shouldn't spend the money because it's too costly?
I don't think so, because the economy is not great right now. And that's due to the fact that lots of stuff is closed, and some stuff that's open, people don't want to go to, even if it's there. So economically, it makes sense to spend a little to save a lot.
Right.
Plus, these tests have gotten down to, many of them, to very reasonable prices, you know, $10, $20 for some of the newer ones that are just coming out. So, and I don't know what, I'm not saying that's what they should be charging. I'm saying that's what they cost to make and run. So I don't think you can make a credible argument that it makes more sense for the good of the economy to not spend this money. This is the kind of money that you want to spend so that you can get back to some semblance of normality as quickly as possible. And, you know, speaking of New Zealand and other countries that have this, I'm not going to say under control, but are in a much better place.
Right.
The reason they're in a much better place is because they not only aggressively test, but then they aggressively isolate. So you have both of those. And then when someone does do something wrong or doesn't do anything wrong, yet we have some positives, you can get on top of it, because you know about it, and everyone around them is quarantined. And so it stops it very quickly. And that's what we're seemingly doing the opposite of. So I don't know if that's a good argument. I can't wait to hear your next one. No, I'm patiently waiting for your next.
I'm at the point of saying, this makes no sense to me. I don't think I've read anything from any of the regulatory bodies or any of the people that, you know, I would have expected. It's just extraordinary to me that that's the case. I'm just gobsmacked, as we would say in England.
Yeah, well, CDC said, I think something along the lines of based on new evidence. So we're waiting for that. We're waiting to hear what the new evidence is. Or new research, or maybe a spokesperson just misspoke. That could be it too.
Boy, I sure hope so, because I can't be more clear, and I think you are as well. Testing is one of the fundamentals of getting us out of this hole, alongside tracing and obviously treatment, which I think is, continues to improve. We're not there yet, but we have certainly some potential solutions that will help us. And then obviously everything that we as individuals can do that, you know, are classified pretty clearly. Wear a face covering, make sure that you keep your physical distance, and wash your hands and stay clean.
And one thing that now you can do in addition is get a flu shot.
And I did today.
Did you?
I just want to say yes. Our whole family has been along, and I thought I'd better get in before the rush. At least I hope the rush. Please, yeah. People, get your flu shot. We've got enough trouble on our hands.
So why is it that people should get flu shots? Will it protect them from COVID-19?
Now, don't start confusing things.
I'm setting it up for you to explain.
So clearly, the flu shot will protect you, or at least limit the potential impact of flu on you. So let's explain. I think it's worth explaining why, if you get a flu shot, you're not necessarily prevented or sure that you will not get flu this season, because we do our best predicting what strains emerge. And some years were better than others. And, it's very protective. It's always fed by the Southern Hemisphere, as we learn from them. And in fact, one year I got my flu shot there when I happened to be there at the right time, and got a mm-hmm. second one when I was up. I'm a constant vaccination individual at all opportunities. I haven't had flu in a while, certainly that I can recall. But when we get it wrong, some people will still get it. But here are the things. First of all, it makes sure that whatever version of flu is going around is going to impact you much less, because this has already tweaked your immune system that's saying, whoa, I'm looking out for flu. Oh, that looks like it might be flu. I'm going to attack it, even if I'm not quite sure. So everything is muted as a result of that. And when it comes to COVID-19, no, it won't prevent you from getting COVID-19. But the one thing you want to be sure of is don't have any confusion, because flu is a completely different disease, and we don't want the complexity of trying to tease that out. So if we can reduce the spread of flu, if there was a silver lining in any of this and more people got their flu shots and we managed to suppress the flu wave that normally takes place in the season, that would be a good thing. It's just going to complicate issues, and it's good public health.
It is. And yeah, I, to your point, I think that's what the thing that scares me the most is, if we were to get a bad flu year, which we know kills people every year, just a matter of how many, if we were to get a bad flu year and put that on top of COVID-19, if we got some kind of big time reemergence across the country, that might put us over the edge in terms of hospital beds. And so, while I sarcastically asked you if it would protect me, and I think it's a valid question for folks who aren't following closely, that they can get confused. No, it will not protect you, but it will make it less likely that you'll need to see a doctor or to be hospitalized. If it doesn't protect you fully from the flu, it will make it less likely you'll need to go to the doctor, or you'll need to get put in the hospital. And that's helpful when there's a global pandemic going on. So I have not gotten my flu shot yet. I didn't even realize, actually, that they were in the stores or doctor's offices. So I will go and ensure that I and my family get ours as soon as possible too. I hope there is a rush, because that would be a great thing. If we had more people, try and get it. And if you haven't gotten one in the past, this is the year to start.
It really is. So for those of you just joining, I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist. And today I'm talking, as I do every month, with Dr. Craig Joseph. He is the CMO for Nordic Consulting. We were just talking about the flu vaccine and testing. And since we're on the whole vaccination thing, maybe worth talking a little bit about the challenge of vaccinations that we've seen with pushback. We've seen an awful lot of disinformation, misinformation, snake oil, folks that seem to perpetuate many myths that vaccines are not safe. Are vaccines safe?
Vaccines are safe. But that's oftentimes I'd have patients say, can you promise me the world? Can you promise me no side effects? Can you promise me they'll work 100% of the time? And of course, I cannot. Much in the same way, I cannot promise you that when you take when you go for a drive in your car, that you will not have a problem with that. We know that you can get into a car accident, bad things can happen to you, but the benefits far, 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 far outweigh the right disadvantages. And so certainly vaccines are safe and effective in the United States. They go through rigorous testing. I don't want to get off track. CDC has told us, has said publicly, that the testing for any potential COVID-19 vaccines will be equivalent and no different than they have in the past. Simply, they'll be faster.
And, you know, just a word on that. I mean, I think you highlight absolutely this challenge of risk. It is impossible to remove all risk, but the risk-reward ratio of this is truly outstanding. The numbers of lives that have been saved, in fact, just in the very recent past, Africa has finally been declared polio-free. That's extraordinarily exciting to me as a somebody that has an African heart. Back in the late 90s, we were causing 75,000 odd paralyses in individuals, more often than not in children, but not exclusively. And we finally managed to purge that disease. Although they had some struggles in Nigeria because some of the terrorists there used it as an opportunity to create a campaign against the individuals, trying to pretend that it was, you know, the complete opposite. Which brings me to the challenge we have in this country. You would think with, you know, all of the information and media that there would be a lot of supporting evidence, but there isn't. There's an awful lot of anti-vaxxers that are out there, people that think that they understand or they've read something somewhere. I know you've talked a little bit about it in your practice. And one of the things that happens, and I've seen, is that practices, individuals, there was one physician who did a fantastic TikTok video, for those of you on TikTok, that was all about getting your vaccines. I could almost hum it if I was any good at music, but I can't. I'm sure everybody's very grateful. I know Craig certainly is.
I am.
And she received death threats, for crying out loud, plus, you know, physical threats. I actually interviewed a California state senator who was assaulted when he tried to stand up for vaccinations. And in fact, somebody went into the public gallery there and threw blood down onto the Senate floor as a sort of stand up against these people. So they're quite emotional, and it's really quite threatening. And there is a group called Shots Heard that tries to come to the support and aid with science and supporting clinical teams to counteract the misinformation that is spread online by these individuals and, by the way, by nation state actors who don't have our best interests. So shout out to Shots Heard. For those of you that are clinical on this podcast, look them up. They're always looking for people. They need help. Craig, are you a member?
I am not yet, but I will be soon. I definitely support that. And, you know, science and evidence and research should be the leading indicator of what we do, and not misinformation and people's opinions. It reminds me of that quote, and I don't know where it comes from, but in God we trust, everyone else bring evidence. I'd want evidence. And I think part of the problem is that sometimes success means that people don't see these diseases anymore. And so it's not worrisome, and it's easy to distract folks from diseases that they're not actually seeing or know anyone that's seeing. And the story I always tell parents, what is Haemophilus influenza type B, HIB, the HIB vaccine. Before I was a resident, before I was a pediatrics resident, all of the attendings told me that they spent most of their time as a resident taking care of kids with meningitis from this bacterium, right? HIB. And I remember when I was a senior resident at a major children's hospital, seeing a lot of disease, attending asking me, hey, you know, how many kids have with HIB meningitis have you seen? And I had never seen one, never, ever. And I still haven't seen one. And so that's because it's a successful vaccine. And if we were to stop, that would come, you know, that's the kind of disease that you could imagine come roaring back. And you don't want to see meningitis in your child. And so, yeah, vaccines are evidence-based and supported, and should be supported.
So I think the one parting comment I have on this is I do understand the resistance. I mean, for me, you know, I think parents come in with the intention of doing good. You know, I don't think anybody comes into a physician's office with, you know, I want to harm my child. They're just misled by the available information. I think there are people out there that have deliberate harm in their intent in the way that they present it. And we as scientists, it is our responsibility to help folks understand. But what that requires is an openness to accept that information. But it's a struggle. It really is.
I agree 100%, and it has been. It's again, I think we're a victim of our success as more and more of these diseases have been eradicated, and you know they're often never really eradicated. We just don't see them anymore because of herd immunity and because they're so infrequent. But since we've done such a great job, people reasonably say, "Listen, I don't know anyone. I've never had this disease. I don't know anyone that's ever had this disease. How do I know this thing is real?" And it's hard to tell you, you know, how do I know the sun comes up morning? It does. And you have to, we have to have a certain common belief system, you know,
right,
that I'm not getting rich off of telling you about vaccines.
Yeah. I've been accused of that online lots of times. Yeah, you know, I'm making money from this.
Yeah. I would be, you know, if that's true, someone owes me a ton of money.
Right.
I will give them my email address if they ask.
I've got a bunch of Nigerian friends that are ready to contact you. I'll pass.
Excellent. You yeah, they've on. Already been reaching out. I don't need them.
So a few minutes left. I know you came across Dr. AI, it sounds like, a fully autonomous diagnostic agent.
I did. I have a. I you know, we were discussing this before we started recording the show. This was actually kind of astounding to me. There is now a company out there that is FDA approved to diagnose diabetic retinopathy. That's diseases that of the eye that can cause blindness for patients who have diabetes without a human. So it's a special camera and takes a picture. Anyone can use this camera, so you don't need to be specially trained. It's very expensive, so we don't expect to see them everywhere. And it takes a picture and then analyzes it. And if it tells you that if it's positive, then you have a risk of at least mild diabetic retinopathy, and you need to go see your eye doctor immediately to get on top of that so that it doesn't progress. So that was the first instance that I'm aware of a machine that is that can diagnose something like that without having it to be, you know, oftentimes those are just, oh yes, well, we'll queue it up for the radiologist or queue it up for the ophthalmologist to review and make the final determination. This is the machine making the determination and then telling you to go see, you know, your ophthalmologist. Most of the time it's negative, and that's what a screening test does. And so saving you the time from having to go to an optometrist or an ophthalmologist for a more formal exam also doesn't seem to require you to be dilated, which is pretty amazing for those of us who don't have great vision. That's always the fun part.
Often, you know, the immediate pushback is, okay, what happens when it gets it wrong?
Yeah, and I talked to the CEO of this company who told me, oh, well, we don't expect that'll ever happen, but if it does, we have malpractice insurance, just like physicians have malpractice insurance. And so you could come in and sue us. Again, they don't expect that, but they're prepared for it, which I thought was very impressive.
Well, that's exciting. I think that really is a major step in the direction of digital health. So some potential for it. I think they've overcome a number of the barriers that we've seen, certainly as we've explored it in our careers. So exciting stuff. All right, as usual, we've run out of time. So just remains for me to thank you, Craig, for joining me. It's always a pleasure and always fun too.
I agree. I look forward to the next time.
Thanks for joining me today. Do you have any better ideas, or have you found a small incremental change that's brought about a big improvement in your world? Let's continue the conversation on our hashtag, TheIncrementalist, or share with me at DrNick1 on Twitter. You can find more information about the show on our program page at healthcarenowradio.com, and tune in next time to hear my discussions with leaders and innovators from around the globe who've revolutionized their space by using small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist, and I'm starting a revolution through evolution.